It is good to be here with you tonight in Berkeley Springs. I grew up here, and usually I'd be off somewhere in the pew causing trouble, but I guess I'll be doing that from the podium tonight. But it's just really good to be here tonight. This is the first chance I've ever had to speak here, and it's just truly awesome to be up here talking to you tonight. Not too long ago, I was at Freed Hardeman, and I took a class, a preaching class, and there was this type of preaching style that I learned. It's called exegesis. I've never heard of it before. And where it is basically you take a passage and you read from it and you speak specifically off of the verses you read. So tonight we'll be in John chapter 8, verses 1 through 11. Again, that's John chapter 8, verses 1 through 11. And we'll go through it one verse at a time. And I'm reading from the ESV version in case you're wondering. And in chapter 8, it's kind of interesting. It actually starts off with chapter 7, verse 53 in the beginning, because the earliest manuscripts do not include 753 through 8 through 11. They were later added to the book. But we'll go ahead and start in chapter 8, verses 1 through 2. This reads, "They went to each his own house, but Jesus went to the Mount of Olives. Early in the morning, he came again to the temple. All the people came to him, and he sat down and taught them." Here we see that Jesus is always on the move, preaching and teaching nonstop, and we see this over and over again in scriptures. You see, Jesus is never still. He wanted to be on the move constantly. He wanted to be talking about God constantly. And even when he was still, whenever he was still, he was sitting, he was teaching, he was talking, he was being an example as much as he possibly could. So just from this verse right here, we can make a whole lesson about being an example and being on the move nonstop. But we're going to keep going on. But right here, we can see already that he's on the move and about his Father's business. Let's go ahead and read chapter 8, verse 3. "The scribes and the Pharisees brought a woman who had been caught in adultery, and placing her in the midst..." Okay, let's go ahead and stop there. Here we see the Pharisees. These guys are awesome. They're a whole bunch of fun, and they're just... they really like to get on Jesus' nerves and test him and try him out. Right here, we like to see the Pharisees are... They're just really insane, almost. I'd like to say insane. And this is a quote, but Einstein actually said the definition to him of insanity is someone that tries an experiment or some kind of, something that you try over and over and over again and expect a different outcome. You can sit down and try to add 2 + 2 all day and expect to get 5, but you're not going to get it. It's always going to be 4. And if you keep trying that over and over and over, that's kind of, to me, that's just true insanity. That's being insane. Well, this is how the Pharisees were. They were constantly testing Jesus and trying to get a different outcome, but it ended up being the same exact way every single time. The Pharisees really were just all about themselves. They never really wanted to test Jesus to make sure that he was really the Son of God or to make sure that he was the real deal and teaching what he was supposed to be teaching. They tested him because, for one, a lot of people were following Jesus and that they were losing their fame. So that caused them what in the long run? It cost them money because people weren't following them around, listening to them, telling them to throw money at them. So they were losing money, they were losing their fame, they were losing their political spot in the community, and they didn't like Jesus at all. They hated Jesus. They wanted him to get gone. They didn't want him at all. Let's go ahead and read chapter 8, verse 4. Verse 4, it says, "They said to him, 'Teacher, this woman has been caught in the act of adultery.'" This verse kind of makes me laugh because they almost act like they're on Jesus' side, but Jesus knew exactly what their intentions were. I mean, do you really think that a bunch of Pharisees, let's say 25 guys, are just walking around and they all happen to fall into the door, pile up on top of each other like the Three Stooges or something, and just accidentally caught her? They knew exactly where that woman would be and what she was doing. And they might have even framed her, set her up. You know, they say, "Hey, guess who's out of town? I saw that guy over there you're kind of looking at, and I don't think anything would happen if you guys hooked up." But, you know, they knew exactly what was happening. They didn't accidentally stumble across it. So here we see that the Pharisees were setting up this woman, and they came to Jesus and brought her to him. They didn't care that she was breaking the law, and they didn't want anything to do with her until they found out they could use that to find a way to trap Jesus. Before that, I'm sure they knew it was happening. They obviously knew it was happening because they were going to her spot to catch her in that act. Before that, they knew it was happening, but they didn't care about it. They didn't care if she was breaking the law or whatnot. They only used that against Jesus. They only cared about it till they found out they can use it against Jesus. In chapter 8, verse 5, it says right here, "Now in the law, Moses commanded us to stone such women. So what do you say?" Right here is the actual Pharisees' test. This is where they find out that when you take a ball and you see a wall and you throw it as hard as you can at the wall and you think it's going to go straight through, but it actually bounces back, comes back and hits you right in the face, it's kind of exactly what's going on here, because they think, man, we got Jesus now. What's he going to do? I mean, this is the law. This is exactly what it says, but that's the problem. It's the old law. It's the law of Moses. They're not letting go of the old law. That's their problem. They're holding on to the past. They don't want to drop their fame. They don't want to follow Jesus. They don't want to lose their money and follow Jesus. They want to be wrong, and they don't want to be wrong and follow Jesus. They want to keep their ways. But you see, that's not what Jesus wants for us. Jesus wants us to let go of our fame. Jesus wants to let go of our money. Jesus wants us to let go of everything and follow him. Let's go ahead and read chapter 8, verse 6. This they said to test him, but they might have some charge to bring against him. Jesus bent down and wrote something in the dirt with his finger. Do you know what it was? Do I know what it was? I don't, and neither than you. And if you tell me you do, I know you're lying, because it doesn't tell us what he said. If my guess, if it was me, I'd be writing something in the dirt. I'd be like, hey, God, give me some strength to not choke these guys, because they're always coming to me, and I'm telling you what, it's getting on my nerves. And it's probably something along the lines of that. But these guys are just always on his back, and I'd like to think it was probably something along the lines of that, him writing for some strength or something like that. Let's go ahead and read on verse 7. And as they continued to ask him, he stood up and said to them, let him who is without sin among you be the first to throw a stone. Notice right in the beginning of that verse, it says, and they continued to ask him. So he's obviously bending over, writing in the dirt, doing what he needs to be doing, going about his business, and they keep bugging him like a little kid in a store. Mommy, can I have this? Mom. And finally, he just stands up. And this is where he verbally just hits him right in the mouth. He says, ye without any sin can throw the first stone. And what do you say to that? I mean, you're just kind of dumbfounded. I mean, they can't throw stones, because then people are going to start calling them murderers. They're going to start calling them fakes and liars and whatnot. So it's going to ruin their reputation. They certainly can't follow Jesus and drop it right there, because then they're also going to lose everything that they want back. They're going to lose their money, their fame, their popularity, their political stance, all that kind of thing. So they're just kind of dumbfounded. They're just stuck. They don't really know what to do. And continue on reading in verse 8, it says, and once more he bent down and began to write with his finger again. Probably writing for more strength. But you notice it's just kind of interesting to see how he deals with him almost like a child. You know, just once again in the store asking for this over and over and over, he kind of just slaps him on the wrist, says no, and goes back to what he's doing. You know, he didn't really make a big deal out of it at all. And going on in verse 9, it says, but when they heard it, they went away one by one, beginning with the older ones, and Jesus was left alone with the woman standing before him. They started leaving. Why the older ones first? Probably just a maturity thing or some type of wisdom thing. I mean, older people just tend to click first. I use older lightly. I know there's a lot of people out here with white hair. We're not going to get on that fact, but I use that term lightly because people that are older have more experience with types of things. They're not very hot-headed. Somebody walked up to my little brother and hit him, he's going to want to hit him back. Somebody walks up to me and hit me, I'm probably going to want to hit him back, but I'm going to think a little bit about it first, because I'm a little bit older and I have a little bit maturity in that area. Reading on in verse 10, Jesus stood up and said to her, woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you? I feel like Jesus probably waited a good while here before he stood up and talked to her. Because here's this woman caught in the act, completely embarrassed in front of everybody, laying here in the street, ready to be killed and expecting to be killed, because she understood that was the old law and she was ready to accept that fact. And she sees before her everybody walking away, everybody leaves, and she's there. And I feel like if Jesus rushed right into that, she wouldn't really be able to process what had just happened. I mean, Jesus literally saved this woman's life. And that's not something that can just be rushed into understanding. So I feel like he probably waited at least a few minutes to let her process the whole situation on what had happened. And he stood up and he said to her, where are they? Has nobody stoned you? Has nobody condemned you? And reading on in verse 11, he says, no, or she says, no one, Lord. And Jesus said, neither do I condemn you. Go on now, from now on, and sin no more. This is a really popular verse, John 8 and 11, and a lot of people like to pick out the first part of it, and they like to say, Jesus doesn't condemn her, and so why would he condemn me? You know, I want to go out here and I want to drink beer, and because Jesus literally found a woman in the act of adultery and doesn't condemn her and lets her go on with a second chance, why wouldn't he not condemn me and give me another chance? Why not? Well, they use that as an excuse to do what they want and continue to do what they want. But they always like to leave out the last part of the verse where it says, from now on, sin no more. And that's the whole problem with the Pharisees. That's our whole problem today, is we like to hold on to things. The Pharisees came up to Jesus expecting to get him trapped because they wanted to hold on to the things in the past. They didn't want to let go of the things in the past. They wanted to hold on to the things of now. Nothing right now matters. The only thing that matters is after we die and go on to heaven. That's what matters. That's our life goal, is to live our life a faithful Christian and help as many people as we possibly can get to heaven with us. It's not to be able to grab as many things as you possibly can or as much money as you possibly can while you're here on earth. Just in this morning's lesson, our preacher Bob was talking about, he saw a sticker on a car that said, he who dies with the most toys wins. That's not right at all. Just like he said, it's not right at all. That has nothing to do with it. You can have every single toy in the world possible. You could have all the cars. You could have all the girls. You could have all the houses, all the beaches, all the fun things, right? But that doesn't matter if your soul, if you don't have that. If you don't have that under control, you don't have anything. These are all things lined up in your life that you were given. A lot of people like to think they don't need God because they worked and earned for the things they have. The preacher in Percival, we were talking to him not too long ago. Well, I guess it was a while ago when the church they got built down there, the new one, and he went door knocking and invited people out to the congregation. And he came up to this one guy's house and he knocked on the door and he said, hello, I'm so-and-so and we're located over here in this new area. We'd love to have you out. And the guy kind of shut him up before he could really get out the rest of what he wanted to say. And he said, just take a moment. You see my house? You see my car over there? You see my garage? You see my pool out back? And he said, do you really think I need God? And he said that to him right to his face. And that's the problem with our mentality today, is we think that we have earned these things. And really, we've earned nothing. The only thing we have to our name is our soul. And if we don't keep that under control, and if we don't treat that like the things that we want, then we're not going to be any better off than these Pharisees. We're holding on to the past. We need to let go of the past and go to the future. And the future is following God's word and doing what he wants you to do and living with him in eternity. We don't need to get caught in this mindset that we are our own God, that we make what we have and that we earn what we have. We don't earn anything. If you say God wasn't out in that field working all day long, plowing up the dirt so I could get the money to go buy that new car, or God wasn't the guy that sat at that desk all day and got carpal tunneling for years because he typed on the computer every day, no, but God gave you the ability to be able to do that. God gave you the hands to be out there working the field. God gave you the hands to be able to work on the computer. Everything comes from God, and it's a blessing to be able to have those things, no matter where you're at in life. But we don't need to be caught up in the mindset of that these are our things. I worked for this. I deserve this. This is me. It's not you. It's God. And we need to give God all the glory that we possibly can. We also need to realize that being condemned is not something God would do because he wants to do it. It's something that God will do because you did it to yourself. And to explain that in a way that's light is basically you choosing to do what God doesn't want you to do. God gives you plenty of opportunities to do exactly what he wants you to do. And it's your choice whether or not you don't do it or whether you do it. And if you choose not to do it, that's you choosing your path to eternity. That's all on you. And that's something that is yours, your soul, that is yours. That's your choice to whether or not go to heaven or go to hell. It's not your choice whether or not you get to take that car into eternity with you. That's going to be whoever's after you die. The only thing that you have in this life is your soul. And you don't want to get yourself condemned to hell forever. You want to be in heaven forever. And I love everybody here, and I want to be in heaven with y'all forever. You know, I don't want to see anybody here get condemned to hell forever. I don't want to see you bring that on yourself. I wouldn't wish that on anyone, no matter who it was. So we as a people, we as a church, need to help each other out. You know, if we see somebody stumbling, it's our responsibility to help them. It's not our responsibility to post it on Facebook and make fun of these people and make a big deal about it, but it's our responsibility to go to this person in person and confront them in a loving and caring way and say, listen, I notice you've been like this, I notice what happened, and it's my responsibility as a Christian and your brother or sister in Christ to love you in such a way that I'm gonna tell you and correct you in this. And I'm not telling you this because I don't like you or I don't want you to have fun and not do whatever it is that you want to do anymore, but I'm telling you this because I don't want you to get condemned to hell forever. I'm telling you this because I want you to live your life for God and I want to be with you in heaven. So we need to be able to help people not get condemned, not just take care of ourselves. It's our job to live our life as a Christian and for God and to help as many people get to heaven as we possibly can. Maybe there's some things that you're holding on into your life. Whatever it is, no matter how hard it gets, there's always going to be someone there for you. A lot of people won't be able to relate, but a lot of people will be able to understand. It doesn't matter if you're struggling with drugs. It doesn't matter if you're struggling with pornography. It doesn't matter if you're struggling with hating someone or holding a grudge on someone. Whatever it might be, you won't get condemned for that unless you get rid of it. That's the thing about the new law, not the old law. This is all what we're talking about, letting go of things. It's not the old law. It's not rolling our sins over into the next year and just kind of pushing them off to the side. This is a matter of taking that sin and literally throwing it into a fire and getting rid of it. It's gone. It doesn't exist. When you hit a delete button on a message on a phone, it's still somewhere in the air floating around. When you delete a sin, it's gone forever. As long as you don't do it anymore, God forgets it. It's gone. So this is a matter of us obeying the new law and forgetting the old things. Let's be a new Christian. Let's do new things. Let's do new things for God. Let's not do old things. Let's not be like the old world. Nothing's changed. You go all the way back to Sodom and Gomorrah, homosexuality. There's drugs going around. There's lies going around. Secrets, all this stuff. Nothing's changed. It's all the same. We might have changed our style and our technology, but nothing else has changed. All of our ways are exactly the same. So let's stop doing the old ways. Let's let go of the old things and let's grab a hold of the new things and let's hold on to God and let's go to heaven together. If there's anything that you need, you can come forward while we stand and sing.